Hello, everybody, and welcome to Books Unbound, the podcast where we unbind books to get to their hearts with your hosts. Me, it's Ariel, and...
me, Raylene. What's up?
It's true. It's us. And we are here today for our special book club episode. This is for Dig by A.S. King. So this was a little delayed, and that's honestly totally on me. So a couple of just life things happened, and it was like just way too hectic for me to figure this out and get it all done. And we kept recording normal episodes, but this extra episode just kept getting pushed back. But we're so excited to be here today. If you don't know how one of our book club episodes work, Raylene, how many have we done so far? We've done like two.
Have we done three? This might have been our third. I can't remember, though.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But they're a lot of fun because I don't know how we thought up this format, but I'm really glad that we did. Basically, for the first few minutes, we'll talk about our general non-spoilery thoughts about the book and stuff. But then we dive into listening to our book club pals' thoughts. So anybody who joined us for this book club who read Dig could send in a voice clip, and we're actually going to listen to their voice clips today, which is so much fun.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, very helpful for me particularly, because I think I read this book like in June.
So yes,
my memories are hazy, so I'm sure the voice clips will help me out.
Absolutely. I just finished it today. I'm sitting in a car right now. That will all be explained in next week's update episode. But I just feel like I should mention that, because if you hear cars zipping by or something, I'm in my driveway. It's not dangerous or anything, but my home is just crazy right now. And this is where the solace was. Well, Raylene, I know it is going to be a little tough for us to do these first few non-spoilery minutes, since, like you said, it was so long ago that you read it. But it would be great to hear just your general thoughts on the book. Like, did you enjoy it? Were there elements that stuck out to you, things that you think really worked, or maybe problems that you had? Non-spoilery for people who just want to listen to, like, do we recommend this book?
Yeah, so I did really enjoy it. I remember when I was reading it, the first little bit was, like, not exactly confusing, but a little overwhelming, because there's so many different characters and you're kind of just thrown in and you don't really know how these people are connected. And a lot of them don't have names, like they're given just kind of random names like the Freak or the Shoveler. And so it's kind of strange and like it's just bizarre, but like not bad in any way. Like I found it easy enough to follow, even though there's like five very separate, actually, I think like six, including some other characters, like six different kind of storylines going on. So I thought it was a little crazy, but like I liked it because it was well done. A.S. King is really good at juggling all that kind of stuff. And I really liked the Freak. Like, she's a very interesting character because she's kind of just like this strange character floating around who kind of has a special power, but you don't know exactly how it works or why she can do these things. So that's something that I thought was really intriguing and cool, because obviously A.S. King often puts in, you know, magical realism. That's a big part of her writing. And I thought that was a nice touch, and it all kind of obviously made sense by the end, but it was just like very interesting to try and figure out why things were happening. So yeah, those are kind of my general thoughts. Like, it was good, it was interesting, and it was bizarre, which is what you would expect from an A.S. King book.
Totally. I totally agree. When I started reading it, I was really confused. I don't know. I kept wishing, because even though I do see the value and I understand the decision making for having those kind of unorthodox names, not really names, labels.
Yeah.
Labels for the different people. For example, one of the characters works, I think it was an Arby's. She works at a drive-thru, and instead of her name, which we shouldn't say because it is kind of a spoiler, instead of her name, everyone just calls her, "Can I help you?" Because that's what she says to people when they drive up to the drive-thru. Mm-hmm. Like, welcome to Arby's.
That's her identity.
Can I help you? Can I take your order? Right.
Yeah.
So that's exactly, that's her identity. So it does add to the character for sure, but I kept wishing it was just their names because it would make me so confused. I just felt so confused. And especially, like you said, I think there's like seven different plots going on.
Probably.
All of the cousins, the grandparents, and then those other random characters. Like, there's so many characters going on, and them not having names, it made my mind so confused.
Yeah, I also found myself, like, overthinking why they didn't have names. Like, I was trying to figure out why throughout the entire story, and then it kind of just, like, gets explained a little bit at the end. But throughout the whole thing, I was trying to figure out, like, is there some kind of, like, social commentary going on, like, that I'm just not picking up on? Like, I was just trying to figure out what is going on here. And so it may have been a little bit distracting in some ways.
Yeah. But overall, I mean, my main thought while I was reading it was, like, I'm so glad I'm reading an A.S. King. It's been so long since I've read an A.S. King, and it just, she's so good.
Yeah.
She's just so good. So many of the lines hit so hard, and so many of the character decisions, you're just, like, I don't know, it's powerful. They feel really, like, a lot of powerful moments, and I think the one thing we can talk about without spoiling is you have all of these characters that are so disparate and you don't understand what they have to do with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way that it comes together at the end is really interesting and, like, masterful. So I really enjoyed it. I definitely do recommend that people pick it up. Because we are such A.S. King peeps, scholars, yeah. You could say, A.S. King scholars, I know some other people who really love A.S. King, and this became their new favorite A.S. King.
Oh, interesting.
Would you go that far?
No, I don't think Everything Will Ever Top Everybody Sees the Ants, because that one is
I feel
just,
the same.
It's so good. And I just reread that one last year, or the beginning of this year. I can't even remember anymore, but yeah, that one stands up, or it holds up just as well as the first time I read it. And this one is like, yeah, I liked it, but it just isn't quite on that same level for me.
I feel ya.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into the voice clips that we were sent.
Yeah.
So excited to listen to these. So just so everyone knows, we have not listened to these in advance. We don't know what people are going to say. Obviously, if it's inappropriate, we'll cut it out or whatever. But mainly I mentioned that because there could be spoilers. We don't know what's going to happen in these messages. So if you don't want to be spoiled on the book, we both recommend it. We think you should check it out. We love A.S. King. We recommend you follow her on social media. I mean, why not? It helps authors buy her books. Buy from independent bookshops. Bookshops are suffering right now. I don't know why I'm doing all these plugs. I feel like a professional podcaster in my car. I don't know. The sound is very good in here. And so if you want to leave now, we understand. We won't take it personally.
That's fine.
But if you're going to stick with us, it's time to jump in. So I just downloaded these to my computer in order of how they, like, were sent to us.
Okay.
So we're going to start with Joanna.
Hello, Ariel and Raline. I just wanted to say thank you for making me give A.S. King a second chance. Because last year, I tried reading Everybody Sees the Ants, and I just didn't like it, and I didn't finish it. But this year, I tried Dig because of you guys, and I'm so happy that I did because it was amazing, and now I know I'm gonna read more A.S. King in the future, so thank you so much for that. Always give authors a second chance, maybe not right away, but soon. So yeah, thank you.
This is so funny for a couple of reasons. Number one, I feel like this always happens to us when we listen to these voice clips. They weirdly go with exactly what we were talking about.
I know.
About.
They always just, like, continue the conversation. And, like, we didn't plan this at all.
And it's also hilarious because we were both just like, it's great, but is it Everybody Sees the Ants?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
And Joanna feels the exact opposite. You know what I will say, Raylene?
What?
And I think that we should mention this. Dig is way more relevant to what I think teenagers are like now.
Yeah, that's true.
And we read Everybody Sees the Ants when we were teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible that there's that kind of shift has happened.
That's a very good point,
like,
yeah.
The characters in this book talk a lot more like what I feel like teenagers talk like now. They use their cell phones in ways that, like, never would have happened, and Everybody Sees the
Ants.
That's
true.
Either way, I'm glad that Joanna is reading A.S. King, even if we disagree.
That's fine. Also, I just want to second what she's saying about giving authors another chance. We've talked about this a couple times before, but sometimes, like, not every single book by an author is going to appeal to you necessarily. Like, I've read so many authors where I love one of their books and dislike all the rest. So this could be the situation for Joanna with A.S. King, or maybe she'll love every other book. You know, you just never know until you give them another chance. Not every single book by the same author is going to be the same. So You're I agree so with that. Right. I agree with that.
I agree. All right, let's go on to Leonie.
Hi. So Dig was actually my first AS King book, and nothing could have prepared me for the weirdness and strangeness. Not in a bad way, but I think it's a book that really doesn't fit into a box that easily, and it really challenges you to pay attention, and when it finally comes together, it's mind-blowing. Like, mind-blowing.
That is very true.
Yeah, that is very true. I feel like the box it fits into is the A.S. King box.
Yeah.
Which is something... How many A.S. Kings have we read? I don't know. I think you've read more than I have.
Five or six, maybe.
Yeah, because I haven't read I Crawl Through It.
Oh, I haven't read that one either.
And I haven't read...
Oh, wait, Still Life with Tornado. I also haven't read that.
I haven't read Reality Boy, and I have only read half of Still Life with Tornado.
Okay.
Something happened.
I read Reality Boy. That one was good. That one, I think, is the least weird of her books that I've read.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But we have read a lot of her books, and I feel like I jumped in knowing that it was going to be strange. Like, I'm just right. Like, A.S. King, I have this perfect assumption of there's going to be something strange, mm-hmm. and I think that that's what's so powerful. Since we are in a spoilery section, I guess I can say whatever the hell I want. but I do remember thinking about how I was like, because obviously the writing is a little strange. Having the labels is a little strange. Mm-hmm. And you know the way that sometimes, if you remember this, Raylene, the text will like get into blocks and get smaller and smaller.
Oh, yeah, I like
guess
that.
Sort of like it's tunneling or digging, maybe. But I guess like... I was waiting for, like, what is the magical realism in here, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, where is it?
Yeah. One thing I remember really liking about the book, like, I did a very, very small couple of clips of her, like, a reading vlog that I never finished, but I rewatched them, so I kind of have some memories of the book. And one of the things that I talked about, like, twice in the clips was, like, it's so crazy how the freak gets, like, called by the dirt. Like, it calls her on her phone.
Yes.
And that was, like, my favorite thing. I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, this is incredible. The dirt is literally calling her on her phone. And obviously that'll make sense later on when you find out she's dead in the ground. But, yeah, I was just like, that's just, like, so imaginative. Like, what author would have done something so, like, simple but also so bizarre? Like,
totally,
I just love that.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when I started to realize that the freak was, like, either dead or imagination or mm-hmm. something, I was like, okay, there's A.S. King. There she is,
yep.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now we have Sophia. I feel like a host. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
No, it's Dr. Sophia.
Okay. Hi, guys. First of all, I loved the book. I loved the characters. I loved the language. And as you two have said before, first sentences are so important, and I was absolutely hooked from the first sentence on. I did, however, have a problem with the ending. To me, it felt a bit forced. So, you know how, for example, in the end, the freak literally told the reader to dig your way out and change your mind? And don't get me wrong, it's a great message, and I'm all for that. But it just felt a little too direct and too much like, and the moral of the story is. So, to me, it didn't really fit with the rather abstract, metaphorical, and non-linear writing style of the book. So, and I just think we would have still gotten her message, even if it had been a little more subtle. Yeah, so I'd be interested to hear whether anyone else felt like that. And thank you too for doing the book club. It is so much fun.
Okay, I love that Sophia brought up the first line, because I do love first lines.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
What the heck the first line was, so here we go. It's a good one. Marla Hemmings is hiding neon-colored plastic Easter eggs in the front flower bed. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Like, oh boy, what's going on? yes, and then the ending. So do you remember this, Raylene?
I was actually, before you got on the call with me, I was reading the last couple of chapters just to remember what was going on. I remember the freak kind of leads them all to her body, right? That's kind of what happens at the end.
Yeah, and then she does this kind of speech where it says, the freak has something to say. She says it to the men exhuming her from her dirt burrito. She says it to the coroner. She says it to the funeral director. She says it to you. Don't live underground forever. And then it's, like, a lot of all caps.
Yeah.
Like screaming, kind of like, you know, make smarter mistakes, stop beating yourself up, control your variables, blend and strain, change your mind, like stuff like that.
Yeah. I kind of didn't mind that, but I do understand. I do understand what Sophia is saying there.
Yes.
You know, like it is kind of heavy-handed, but I feel like for me, I liked having that after such an abstract book. I kind of like just
being
like...
That's how I felt.
Yeah, like I can see it both ways though. It does make sense. It goes kind of outside of the vibe of the rest of the book, but I kind of liked that because I was like, yes, this is so bizarre and strange, and like I feel like I'm just floating around looking at these people, and it was nice to just be like, no, this is what I'm saying, goodbye. Like I kind of liked that because it seemed to kind of fit with the Freak's character as well, from what I remember.
Yes. I think I'm imagining it like a painting in my head. Like, imagine you have like an abstractish, not like Picasso, but like impressionist style Monet, very blurry kind of painting of like something, and the whole thing is the exact same. It's very beautiful and it goes together very well. Monet is like my favorite painter, so I love that. But if you have even in a Monet, one of my favorite paintings by Monet, I forget the name of it, but it's like this snow scene. It's very just white, and then there's a couple of houses in it. And it's like, because the houses are clear, the two things work together. Like, you can love that the abstract stuff is around it, but the little clear houses kind of give it a period at the end. You kind of have something to focus on and something to build everything around. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, that makes perfect sense.
I felt the same way. I felt like, yes, okay, after such an abstract thing, I had kind of liked having A.S. King just be like, and here's what the Freak has to say, especially when she's a character that was so oblique during the whole book.
Yeah.
Like, what was the Freak doing? I'm still not fully sure.
she was just popping up and around and talking to people.
I also think, and this is like, I've read young adult since I was, you know, a young adult. And I've read a lot of young adult, and I think that it's wonderful when young adult is like this book here that is really smart and really clever, and it doesn't take its readers like it doesn't act like its readers are stupid. Like, teenagers aren't stupid. They can read high level books and understand them fully. I wrote on the back, like, it was really interesting to have a fully YA book. I think this is totally YA, but with some of the characters being adults, you know. The grandmother and the grandfather are really core characters. They have their own chapters and they deal with really adult stuff. But at the same time, I do think that for a young adult audience, maybe it is nice to, at the end, have kind of this corralling speech that they can turn to and just be like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I did understand. Like, yeah, and like, yes, I did understand what the message was, instead of just hoping they got it. Yeah. Sometimes you have to be a little heavy-handed with young adult books.
Okay, here we go with Ashley.
One of my favorite scenes of the novel was when the grandchildren are working together in the Easter egg hunt and Godfrey just doesn't understand why they are. It's a huge contrast to him and the farm and his constant fighting with his family. And I like how it shows them healing and growing from their parents, but there also is an acknowledged duality in that while they have learned and grown, they still also hold some of those same biases and prejudices like we see in Katie. So I felt like the inclusion of both sides of that was really great.
That's very true. That was beautiful. Especially because some of them didn't really know each other very well. And so it was nice that they were able to come together and just be like, yeah, we are family. Like, most of them not having really had a family before, like a real family, it felt good for them to all be together and just be the opposite of their parents and all hating each other and fighting. So that is, it's really nice.
I think this generational thing is really important in the book. And I totally forget where I heard A.S. King talking about this, or if I read it on a blog or something or other, but I remember reading about how one of the ideas that A.S. King wants to push across in this book is that children can be different than their parents.
Totally.
And that you're not, and it even kind of says it in the book, but you're not stuck in your genes. Like, just because your parents are bad people doesn't mean that you're a bad person.
Yeah.
And like it says in the book, like, you're gonna make mistakes, but it's not really about whether your mistake, whether you keep making mistakes, is about making better mistakes and learning from those mistakes and trying again and earnestly trying to be a better person. And with this book, we have a lot of really sketchy racism from the parents and the grandparents. I thought the whole plot line with the grandmother having, like, do you remember she needed, like, a blood transfusion?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. She was so bad.
And, yeah, like, that was so interesting. And also, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, something that I also found really interesting was that moment when you find out, what's his name, Mike, the neighbor guy? When you find out he has a white power yes. tattoo. And he was, like, such a, like, seemed like a good guy, very helpful, yes. very nice. And then you're like, oh, he's a white supremacist. Like, oh, that was so shocking to me. Because I was like,
it was.
It's so truthful, though. Because it's like some people might look good on the outside and be bad or vice versa. You know, like there's so, like, yeah. you just never fucking know.
Yes.
That just, like, really got me.
Yes, that was for me one of the most disappointing and shocking moments. You're just like, no. Especially because the shoveler, he didn't have anyone. And it was not like, exactly. finally he had this, like, friend. And then the friend's, like, white power. And you're like, pardon, like, yeah. oh my god. But I think honestly that this for me is, like, the main theme of all of A.S. King's books, but definitely this one is, like, people are complicated. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's really messy. And what I mean by that is the shoveler's mom knows about the tattoo, knows that that Mike is yeah. kind of like this, but still is his friend. Do you know what I yeah. mean? And it's about, like, balancing things, and I don't know, people aren't, like, as pure and clean as I think people wish we were. Like, people wish right. we were computers, where we were like, yep, that's bad, cut it out of my life. Yep, that's bad, cut it out of my life.
Yeah, but,
like,
nothing is ever that simple.
It's
yeah.
exactly. Like you said, like, he was a good guy for the most part. Like,
yeah.
like, hangout-wise, kind, helped his mom, helped mm-hmm. his family get an apartment and everything. So, so complicated, and I really appreciate that A.S. King puts that nuance in.
Totally.
To think about, like, complicated
people. Yeah, like, nobody is just one thing. People are complicated. There are lots of different things, and it all comes together to make a very confusing, complicated person almost yeah. every time.
Yeah, and, like, at the beginning of his shock, and he has every right to, the shoveler is like, I guess his name's David, he's like, I'm not gonna talk to him anymore. Like, I'm cutting him out of my life, right. whatever. But then near the end of the book, he's like, I need to go talk to him. And, like, it might be the end of that relationship,
yeah.
but I'm gonna actually try and talk to him and communicate. And it was kind of this kind of, like, you have to have those difficult conversations. Totally. So interesting.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to Lucy.
Hi, Ariel and Raylene. Dig is like nothing I have read before. It was so weird and yet wonderful and had so many important things to say. The first part almost felt like a short story collection, and how these characters and their lives seemed so different and unrelated to the next. But as it went on, it was really satisfying to see the pieces connect and the story come together as a whole. The revelation regarding the freak was really shocking for me, and I didn't see that coming at all. But overall, I gave it a 4 out of 5. A very important, confronting read, and I appreciated the hopeful ending that the next generation will do better than their predecessors. Thanks, guys. Bye.
I think Lucy makes two really interesting points there. I completely agree with her about it being, like, feeling like short stories at the peak.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is partly why it's a little confusing, because you're like, I'm not reading a short story collection. I know these yeah. are connected somehow, and you're trying to figure out how is it, and so it is a bit confusing. But mm-hmm. it's true, the stories felt very clearly different. And honestly, and this is just the power of A.S. King, I was super interested in all of the different ones.
Yeah, even if they're just simple things, like a girl yeah. working in an Arby's.
I was
intrigued, like, by every single one.
I also think what Lucy said about the generational thing, I mean, we kind of touched on that before, but I do think that it's really interesting that
yeah.
I can see them despairing and being like, the world's not getting any better, we still have lots of problems. And it's like, yes, it's true, we have so many problems to fight, but we're undeniably better than we were in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And that was undeniably better than it was in the 40s. And, like, do I wish that all of this progress happened instantly? Of course. But this is proof of it, right? That generations can do better than the generations before them.
Yeah. And you just have to hope that each future generation will keep doing better and won't, you know, start regressing or whatever. Like, we just have
That's true.
It's a hopeful message to be, like, the next generation. Like, as long as... I mean, because obviously with each new generation, there's going to be hopefully less parents, you know, spewing bad messages and teaching their kids bad things that they have to then overcome. Hopefully there's going to be more, you know, happiness and hope and joy you know, that kind of stuff.
The good stuff.
Yeah.
The important stuff.
Yeah.
Well, our next message comes from Wilma, who is Life Goofer, who always comes to our live shows. So let's hear what Wilma had to say.
King is such a role model, the way she talks about white supremacy from the white people's perspective, and she's not trying to do it from a black person's perspective. She's so honest in it. I love that so much, without undermining young adults' intelligence as an ability to understand this type of writing. And it's not stereotypically YA at all. This book was honestly about to be a favorite until the ending was revealed. I really like open endings. I felt like I had a pit in my stomach the whole time, and I really loved the way she did that. I also thought about how this is a mashed potato book about potatoes. The freak knows you're not a potato. Don't let anyone put butter on you.
That's so funny. Thanks, Wilma. It's a mashed potato book about potatoes. Oh my god.
Yeah.
I think Wilma touches on something really important there, and that this is a book about, you know, racism in America specifically,
white privilege,
white privilege, but it's from a white perspective, and I think that's so important because, what is it, like 70% of America is white? Something like that.
It's, I don't know.
You know, the vast majority of the states is white. And so it's so, so, so important that white Americans and white everyone's, Canadians or whatever, Europeans, read books from the perspective of people of color, obviously, so that they can actually start to understand what different lifestyles are like, etc. But I think it's also really valuable to read from people who are white and are battling with these same problems within their families, within their homes and their communities, trying to navigate how does your white privilege affect your life and how does it color the way that you live your life, you know?
Absolutely. And it is interesting to see stories about white people facing their own white privilege, you know?
Yeah.
And just seeing that through their eyes, like just to know that there, I mean, obviously this is fiction, but just to know that there are people out there who are thinking about these things and to possibly get people reading the book to start thinking about these things more.
Yes.
Very, very good, good cycle, I think.
Yeah. And in a way that doesn't make, I've seen some scary stuff online where people are, it seems like they're scared of being white. Like they hate themselves for being white. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, totally.
And I think that's such a sad perspective because there's nothing wrong with being white. It's just a skin color like every other skin color. It's about being aware of what your whiteness means and how that lets, I forget how she phrases it. It's early in the book, but she's like, it's like being white is a passport to like the world's
to
amusement park.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And it's exactly that. It's not about hating the fact that you're white. It's just about knowing what being white means and how it affects others around you and how you can use it to help people around you.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do think A.S. King is a hero, but I'm really proud of her for doing this book and, you know, kind of stepping up to the table and offering something that I think is really valuable.
Yeah.
Well, our next message is from Bailey from North Carolina. Nobody else told me where they were from, but Bailey did.
I went into this book knowing absolutely nothing, and I was pleasantly surprised, so that's good. But I loved the format. I don't think I've read a book that has been written in the same way as Dig, and I was really appreciative of that. I thought it added a lot to the story, and I also loved how character-driven the story was, as well as the underlying message. The whole thing about race and family ties and all that, I thought that was just really cool. But anyway, love your podcast.
Thanks, Bailey.
Yeah,
we try.
Nice.
We really try. Sitting in our car, sitting in my car, I care. I really care.
Yeah, yep.
I think that, yeah, I'm just really glad that we made a couple people read an A.S. King book because they are very different. And I think that I wish more people would read them. So I'm so glad that that this made some people pick it up. Can you think of any books that are similar to this?
You know what? While we were listening to that voice clip, I was just thinking, like, this is unlike anything I've ever read. Like, I don't read a lot of books that are, like, about families because I just don't generally like that. Like, I'm usually just kind of like, I don't care about family drama and all this stuff. But this had more to it than just the typical kind of dysfunctional family story. So I really like this one. But yeah, I don't read a lot of books like this, but I definitely don't think there is anything like this specifically either. Because, like, it's a family drama with magical realism that's all about, you know, white privilege. Like, there's not really anything else like this that I've ever come across anyway, where they actually, like, address it, you know? There's lots of stories about privileged white families, but they don't talk about it.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally know what you mean. Because in my mind, I was like, okay, what other books kind of are the surrealist abstract thing? I'm like, A.S. King books. And then I was like, what are family books? And I'm like, the last one I read was The Vanishing Half. And I'm like, no, that's not helpful. It's not similar at all. Like, none of, like you said, there's very few things that I can think about, or none, I guess, that I can think about that meld the two. Like, this magical realism strangeness with the family aspect. I mean, I'm sure there are some, but I just
haven't come across them yet.
I'm glad you liked it, Bailey. All right, now we're going on to Abby.
Hi there. I'd like to have a discussion around the dirt and underground aspect. And how that connects to truth and maybe more of our real and authentic selves, and how that authenticity is born out of nature and born out of the earth and the connection that's formed there. And I'd love to hear your ladies' thoughts about it, because that was one of my favorite aspects about the story. All right, thanks.
I'm glad Abby brought that up, because the title of the book is Dig.
Yeah.
Which obviously, like, you dig outside. When you think of digging, you think about digging dirt.
Totally.
I was about to say something. So this book, I have an ARC copy, an advanced copy, and it was signed by A.S. King. And it says, Dig, Ariel, Dig, A.S. King. So what do you think that the kind of verb of dig, what does she mean by dig? Because I think it's kind of like digging to the truth, right? Like, not giving up. And she, I mean, it was very interesting, because in the book, I don't know if you remember this, but they talk about tunnels, like people kind of feeling trapped in tunnels, tunnels of, like, kind of your own problems and your own mind, and trying to dig out of that. But I think, like, and then we have the shoveler character, who's always carrying his shovel around. Yeah, any thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good question. But yeah, the mentioning the truth is kind of interesting too, because it's like you want to dig down to find the truth, or find the truth within yourself, or dig your way out. Like, it could be used in both ways. Yes, like, it could be digging down, but it could be also digging outwards. And
I think that's huge. Digging outwards is big in the book.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, if you feel trapped by whatever it may be, you feel like you're covered in dirt, and you just, like, making the effort to dig yourself out. Like, it can be hard. Yes. It can be uncomfortable and difficult and painful, but being able to do it and, like, actually doing it, I think, is really important. So I don't know. That's kind of the way I see the word in regards to the book.
I completely agree. I think you put it really well. I think, that digging upward and outward and digging yourselves out of something, I think, is really important.
Mm-hmm. Also digging up potatoes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's all she meant.
Absolutely. She's listening to this podcast being like, I just meant potatoes.
You guys are overthinking this.
All right. Up next is Carolina. Or Carolina.
Hello, Ariel and Raylene. I really enjoyed the book Dig. I'm already a fan of the author. But this book particular questioning what whiteness and privilege is, and how some families think that through suffering, that's how you thrive. That was a very interesting point to explore. Definitely a great book for what we're experiencing right now socially.
I think that's a really interesting point. Like, because basically right at the beginning, or I don't know, at some point we understand that the grandparents are super mega rich and mm-hmm. they decided not to give their kids any money. Right. Which already, what? like, okay, a shocking decision. But they kind of, you get the idea that especially the mother had this thought that you can't be a good person or you can't live a good life unless you kind of, unless you make it on your own.
Yeah, unless you know? You suffer, like, unless you do the work.
Struggle and yeah. do that quote-unquote hard work to make it out and up and thriving.
Right.
And obviously the great, great irony is that they made their millions through a lot of luck and privilege.
Yeah.
Like they didn't, they definitely, and this is one of the things that bothers me when we talk about, and oh, I think I talked about it with that Zadie Smith collection, Imitations. There's this great essay in there about the difference between suffering and privilege. Just because you have privilege doesn't mean you don't suffer. I think totally. That's so important to think about and to remember. Like, even, and they put it, and A.S. King puts it in this book, like, even a rich white woman who has everything you could ever want, and it was, like, talking about some celebrity in here, like, cuts herself because she's so, like, she's really depressed. Like, just yeah. because you're really privileged doesn't mean you don't suffer. So I think that's really important to remember.
Absolutely.
I've never met anyone who is never suffered.
No, exactly.
But it is that thing about how, like, certain privileges just help you along, and acting like, oh, all you have to do is like work hard, that's is such a stupid
yeah, like saying everyone has to start concept. From the very bottom and work their way up, like they it's could have a step up, like that won't yeah. hurt them, that won't make no. them lesser people, like
exactly. And like to the point of watching, like, I think I don't know if you remember this, but basically, like, the youngest of the five daughters got pregnant really young, and so yeah. the grandparents kicked her out, right? And yeah, that's why the shoveler never knew anything about his family, because it mm-hmm. was kind of like Lorelai, Rory, Gilmore style,
right.
left and lived on their own, except for, obviously, Lorelai decided to leave, and this character was kicked out. But what we find out is that, the shoveler is kind of, David is curious about who his dad is.
Right.
And at the end, she's like, I can't tell you. And then he's like, oh, okay. And then somebody says to him, like, she can't tell you because she doesn't know.
Right.
And I got the sense that she had been raped.
Quite possibly, yeah. I remember thinking that.
So this is what I'm talking about. Like, to the point that their children are going through these really horrible, difficult situations, and they're like, nope, yeah. you just need your own, figure it out. And yeah. it's like, oh my god, okay, well, that's not helpful to anyone. Because, I don't know, the whole thing about white privilege is about recognizing it, and then using it to help. mm-hmm. Right? And so, like, if you recognize that you have it and you can help your children out and you can help their grandchildren out and help your community out yeah. and help whatever, like, why not do that? There was that really interesting moment when they're at the hospital and the grandfather got, what was his name? Gottfried? Gottfried? Yeah. That's one of those names that I read and clearly have never said out loud.
It's nicer on the page. Like,
he's like, I have $10 million in my bank account. I bet you none of these people have that much money. Mm-hmm. And you're like, dude, you're thinking about the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like, what are you doing with those $10 million? Like, yeah. freaking donate them. Please.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, that's really interesting. All right, we're going on to Camilla.
Hey, guys. So, I just wanted to say that this book is really depressing. Like, this kid has such a sad life. Gosh. I'm like, really sad. I'm sad while I read. I'm sad while I imagine what it's like to be him. So, yeah, that's it. Depressing.
It was sad. There was a lot of sadness in the book.
It's true. Agree. We're all talking about how great the book is, and it is great, but it is also sad.
It is really sad. It's funny, though, because I would say that the shoveler is the main character.
Yeah.
Like, if we had to pick one, mm-hmm. it's like that. I felt like he had the most chapters and the most content and kind of, I don't know, I was the most invested in his story.
Yeah.
But it was so funny because I related to him so hard. And I'm going to tell you right now, I obviously have had a much easier life than he has. But I really, really, really related to how much he moves.
Oh, yeah.
I found that really interesting when I was reading. I'm flipping through the book trying to find it because I remember I highlighted a passage about how much he moved and stuff. But so here I just highlighted, I just moved into a blizzard. I was like, oh boy, where am I moving? Yeah, I remember one best friend per location, if I had one. And it's like, in Texas, this was my best friend. In this city, this was my best friend. And it's really funny because, I don't know, I just relate to that so hard. I'm like, he was talking to his mother later on in the book, and she's like, that's where I went to grade school. And he's like, you only went to one grade school? And she's like, yeah, from kindergarten to sixth grade. And I was like, yeah, I don't understand these people. Like you.
Yeah.
I was like, people who grew up in the same town their whole lives, or for the majority of their lives were in like one town, lived in one home or one or two homes and went to one or two schools. And I very much felt David's kind of feeling really ungrounded, I guess, right? But like I said, I think everyone could hear that car just go by. Apologies. We're doing it live. Yeah, I think obviously he had a lot worse of a time. Like, I have two loving parents who have always taken care of me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm very fortunate. But I just thought that was a really cool aspect to have in there. And I'm glad. I don't know. I feel like I read a lot about single parents. Like, there's a lot of characters.
Totally.
I feel like there's a lot of books. But not a lot of stories about people who have moved around a lot and don't know where they're from. Like, Raylene, if you ask me where I'm from, I don't know what to tell you.
You're from all over.
I don't know how to answer that question. I'm like, do you want to know where I was born? But I only lived there for a year. Do you want to know where I went to school?
Where did you spend the most years, I think? Where did you spend, like, your most formative years? Like, did you stay anywhere for more than 3 years?
Yeah, so that would be, like, Kingston, Ontario. But I hate that town.
Well, it's your hometown, so suck it up.
And I don't have any family there. I don't have any, do you know what I mean? So there's no reason that I would ever go. Yeah. There's no ties, exactly. So there's no reason that I would ever go there. I don't know anyone who lives there and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just really related to the character with that. But I wanted to add a positive thing to Camila's message of it was sad. It is sad.
Yeah.
Sad book. All right, Natasha.
Hi, Ariel and Raylene. So I really loved Dig. I didn't expect to love it as much as I did, but I thought it did a great job at being a well-paced book that also addresses different aspects of race and class. I usually don't like magical realism in contemporary novels, so that's mainly what surprised me about liking this book so much. But the whole perspective of the freak being able to flicker to different places whenever she wants made me wonder whether that even is magical realism. Because at the end of the book, we find out that the freak is the murdered cousin of the kids. So it turns into being more of a paranormal thing than a magical thing. What do you guys think? Thank you. Bye.
Natasha, what a great question.
Yeah, that's
really
point.
Interesting. Raylene, what do you think is the difference between magical and paranormal? Would you call this magical or paranormal?
Well, I would say, and I think this is what she's kind of saying, is that, like, someone who is a regular person who can, you know, who has a superpower, basically, is kind of magical, whereas someone who's a ghost or is, like, just an image of a person is more like, supernatural rather than magical, which I think falls into, like, the paranormal kind of field. So I think it is kind of a fine line, because at the beginning it seems like she's just a regular person, because people can see her, people can talk to her, but she can also, like, teleport. So it's like, oh, so she just has a magical power. But it's like, oh no, she's just like a ghostly figure, kind of. It is a little bit of a different vibe. It's like, other than that, there isn't really any magical realism other than the freak, right? As far as I can remember. So it is kind of like, that is something to think about.
Yes, I think they're very close together, the two ideas and the two, I don't know, what would we call them? Devices, literary devices. I think they're very similar. Or like, they're in a Venn diagram. Like, you can kind of cross between them. I think of it sort of like fantasy and sci-fi.
Yeah.
Where it's like, with some books, like, in my head, I'm like, well, fantasy has dragons and sci-fi is in space.
Right.
But that's not, I'm like, that's just me trying to classify things. There's a lot of sci-fi that I would consider fantasy and vice versa. Like, it mm-hmm. can be very murky. But also, like, I remember asking the question in one of my courses in university about, like, what is the difference between magical realism and fantasy? And I was like, I don't know.
Like, is it just because, like, having fantastical elements in a non-fantastical setting is kind of
Yeah, that's the conclusion that I came to, where it was, like, there is an element that is magical, but nothing else is, and it's not standardized. So, for example, you have a talking flower, but it's not a world where flowers talk.
Yeah.
That would be fantasy. If you lived in a fantasy world where there was, like, the name of a race that were little talking flowers, then we're talking fantasy because it's, like, established in the world. But if you just have a character who happens to randomly and for no seeming reason have conversations with flowers and they talk back, that would then be magical realism. So that's how I also draw the distinction between the two.
Right.
I really liked my idea just then. That should be a book.
That was pretty cool.
All right, well, it's time for our last message from Jennifer.
All right.
Hey, Ariel and Raylene. This is Gagne from Buffalo, New York. I finished reading Dig a little over a week ago. And with that time, I've been thinking about kind of the big themes in this book. It is very complex, and it kind of was a little hard for me to read, but I think one big question that'd be cool to hear from you about is, how does this book portray intergenerational wealth and intergenerational trauma, particularly how Marla and Gottfried are represented, and then their adult children, and then the grandchildren? I love you all, and hope you're safe.
We hope that you guys are all safe too, Jennifer. Yeah. Sending you some good vibes. She said Gottfried so simply. Now I feel like a fool for not having for having ever stumbled on it.
We have no idea.
Intergenerational wealth and trauma. I mean, I do think we kind of touched on that. This is it's one of the reasons that it could work for us to listen to the messages in advance, because I could lump them together, but I like listening to them live. But yeah, no, I do think, like I said, I think that was a really important message. And I think, based on everything that's happened in our year 2020, I think we've seen a lot of examples of this, of seeing situations in which the younger generation is thinking differently than an older generation. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, you know, Brexit, which was a couple years ago, but we're talking about the same period here. Brexit, like, there was a very clear divide between how young people voted and older people voted. And the American election, it's, again, like, younger people versus older people. Like, there is these generational divides. And I don't know, I think two things. One, I think it's this book is kind of reminding us to have these conversations with different generations. And two, like we said before, I think it's really showing us to not feel trapped. Like, if you are in a situation in which you, like, don't agree with your parents or whatever, you don't have to be in that situation forever, and you don't have to be that way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Covered it. Do you have any closing thoughts, Raylene, on Dig by A.S. King? I'm just going to look back here. I wrote something.
Oh.
Well, I wrote, everyone is hurting.
That's true. Everybody's suffering in one way or another. Man.
I love that about A.S. King. Her characters have so much compassion, and like, you have so much compassion towards her characters. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel a soft spot for all of the characters in this book. I don't know how she does that, but she always does.
Yeah, that's true. She makes her characters feel very real. I feel like that's one of her biggest strengths as a writer, is writing something interesting and unlike anything you've ever read, but also feels very real, even with the magical realism and all the strangeness surrounding it. Mm-hmm. The characters feel very much like real people, no matter how strange their surroundings are. And I think that that's really great.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, did you have any other final things you wanted to say that you remember when you read it? You were like, I've got to mention
the
flea circus.
I forgot about the flea circus. Man, there are lots of weird elements in there that I have forgotten about, clearly.
I think we had a great conversation here, and I'm so grateful to everyone who sent in messages. We really appreciate that, and we really appreciate your grace and your patience in waiting for this episode to come out. I really appreciate it as someone who's just done a big move and everything. I think that's awesome. So,
yeah.
Yes, our Before the Coffee Gets Cold book club is coming up soon. So we'll have two of these episodes coming out within a month of each other, which I think is fun. And then we'll be having our next book club sometime early in the new year.
Hell yeah. I'm excited.
Awesome. All right. Well, we will talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.